your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Merry meets and merry parts, bright the cheeks and warm the heart. For tread the circle thrice about to keep unwelcome spirits out. Bide within the law you must, in perfect love and perfect trust. Mind the threefold laws you should, three times bad and three times good. These eight words the reed fulfill, and ye harm none, do what ye will.
Welcome to Stirring the Cauldron on the Para-X Radio Network. And now, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
Merry meet everybody and welcome. Tonight we're going to be talking to Ted Enoch, and it's about his book, We Witches, not the kind of we you might be thinking about, the little ones. Ted is probably best known as the primary artist for the popular Fancy Nancy I Can Read series, and in addition, he channeled Hilary Knight for the hardcore, Eloise in Hollywood. And throughout, he's been a writer and plays and films and illustrating books and graphic novels and all kinds of stuff. And so he's here to talk about the Wee Witches. And as always, if you're in the Para-X chat room listening to the live show, we welcome questions and comments to the guest. And if you're listening out of chat, feel free to join us at paraxradionetwork.com. Okay, Ted, it's safe to come out now.
Okay, I'm here.
Okay.
I do all sorts of things. I draw all sorts of things.
You do, and we're going to talk about a lot of that, I think, as time allows.
Hope so.
But I'm still kind of chuckling about your sea creatures. I've never known anybody. Tell them what you have and how come, and because it'll take us all back to childhood.
Sure, yeah. A friend of mine, a long-term friend of mine, we were friends in high school. I have a wonderful picture of us. How old were we? 17, 18, looking very hippie-like with a guitar. And we were both in the theater class, and we were doing, I don't know if anybody out there remembers Spoon River Anthology. Ring any bells, anybody? Anyway, it was based on a book, and basically they were first-person epitaphs, like, I was a poet, and I tried my best, and I ticked away in my little things while Emerson roared in the pines. Anyway, it's a whole evening of that kind of stuff, and wow. we did some music for it. We were singing these folk songs. Anyway, she bought me, surprisingly, a Christmas present of sea monkeys, now called brine shrimp, in a globe, and they sat in the box for more months than I should have left them. Finally, I set it up, and they keep me company. They're within arm's reach from my laptop, and they're little pink fingernail things, and they swim around in circles.
And you feed them, and they get all excited, yes.
They do, yeah. I mean, the brochure said you don't have to, but they'll live longer if you take care of them. And like I said earlier, I'm a pretty good shrimp dad. I feed them, clean the water. They get excited when I sprinkle this powder you can buy from the company. So they seem pretty happy, and they've lasted for a year and a half.
Wow. So. I wonder. Yeah. That it just made me smile because I remembered I always wanted sea monkeys, but they wouldn't let me have them. Now I know I could go out and buy some myself, except perhaps it would be trouble with the cat. So
no, they're in a I Dream of Jeannie, bottle with a stopper on top, and the cat might knock it off, whatever
yes.
you put it on. But
yes, yeah. He knocks everything off. Yeah. So yeah, that wouldn't be good. Okay, do you name them?
Or are they... I say that in a joke every once in a while. No, I couldn't even tell the difference between them. Larry.
Curious.
Crowley, I can't. Yeah.
Okay.
No.
Just wondered.
I thought about it briefly, but it would only be for my own amusement.
Well, there you go. I mean, that's what it is. Yeah. All right. So let's get talking about your illustrator background, because okay. Is that like when you were growing up, is that what you wanted to be when you got into adulthood?
My father was a jock, a very sweet man, but he could have gone pro for baseball and football, but he broke his shoulders on a scholarship in college, so that was the end of that. But he had some ability. I don't know where it came from. And I think how my interest in illustration started was he and I used to do our version of what the surrealists called exquisite corpse, which was somebody would write one line of a poem, fold the paper, and pass it on to the next person. And by the end of it, you'd have like free association, bit of poetry. We'd even do that in drawing-wise. He'd draw a circle, I'd draw an eye, he'd draw the nose, and we'd end up with a picture. And we did that a lot. And I guess it took hold. And I somehow inherited some kind of knack, which blossomed as I kept doing it, even though I wanted to be a writer. And to cut to the end and how I ended up going into an illustration black hole for 25 years was when I came to New York, having done some theater program art and bits here and there. I had a friend who worked at a publishing house, and he said, "Do you want to come on board and join the bullpen to do art every day?" And I said, "Yeah, sure. You know, it's better than waiting tables." End of the story is I should have waited tables because I had no room to do anything else except illustration for too many years. But now I'm back focusing on the writing. It comes faster. And to get a little philosophical, I think I have more to share in the writing department than the art department.
Well, you can be both now that you're, you know,
I can.
Now that you grew up and you know, you can make it that way. Yeah.
Supposedly.
So we're talking about a book called We Witches, and yeah. Were you curious about witchcraft when you were a youngster, or how did that come about?
I was thinking about that, you know, in anticipation of us talking tonight, and it really came out of, I don't know, it's hard to tell where your interests start young, but when I was a little nerdy, you know, bookworm, I started reading myths and, you know, genuine myths from other countries, and that took hold, and I expanded from there, and it seemed like a gradual transition from mythology and fairy tales. Oh, fairy tales are Celtic. What else is happening over there? Oh, Celtic had Wicca. What's Wicca? When they honor this and that, and it just kind of, you know, grew in its own pace. I have no Irish blood in my entire family, but I've been a fan of Irish folk tales and traditional music and field recordings since I was in, you know, middle school. I don't know why.
Well, it's in your heart and soul somewhere.
Yeah, I think. Sure. And I don't know about past lives, but I don't, you know, if I was to guess it, I would have been a whaling person.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. That's another. Yeah, I know. It's another interest. I have no idea, but Moby Dick is like my Bible, and who cares? But anyway. Back to witchcraft.
Well, okay, so the book is an ABC primer, and it's an introduction to the world of Wicca and the magic of nature. How did that book come to be?
Well, am I a practitioner? On again, off again, currently off, but not in my heart. But for a while there, you know, I would practice with various partners that I was with, you know, twosomes, and then a circle of friends with mutual interests formed a coven, a circle, and we did pretty beautiful, elaborate ceremonies for, I would guess, 5 years. And there were about 5 or 6 of us, give or take, and we kind of covered the spectrum to the traditional English Wicca to more... you know, introducing other pantheons and sort of and other cultures, but they were all beautifully crafted. And to me, that rang bells to me because I was in it for, is there such a thing called spiritual aesthetics? But anyway, that's what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said earlier, when we spoke earlier, it played itself out like a book club in a very nice way. But it was really wonderful. And one of the women involved and I were talking, and I'm doing kids' books, and we said, "Hey, why don't we do a book?" So that's where it came from.
Wow. And in the book, I mean, there's accurate symbols of witches and worldwide are, it's kind of woven through the magical artwork, as well as a hidden clue to a secret witch name, which me and a friend of mine, she got it first. I'll just say that.
Okay.
She was smarter than I was. but, you know, I think that maybe some people don't know what an ABC primer is, seriously. So why don't you explain what that is?
Well, it could be a lot of things, but in this case, I mean, I actually looked at the publisher's page for the book just to remind me how they phrased it. And they use like playful and gentle introduction, which basically says this is not a teaching book. You know, it's certainly not a, you know, pedagogical handbook to how to indoctrinate your child into Wicca. It's just sort of an exposure to things. You know, that yes, some of the symbols we use in the very elaborate, much too detailed borders in the book are real. There's a lot of pentagrams. So if a child asks, "What's a pentagram, Mommy?" you can tell them. But other than that, it's, you know, there's some herbs and candles, and so it's just sort of surrounding yourself like a mood board with witchcraft.
Mm-hmm.
Not really teaching, more exposing. You've got things about nature, and there's a C is for cauldron. So you get the idea. It's really not hammering anything. It's just sort of showing this and showing that, and maybe it prompts some questions, and all you know, backed up by, I hope, interesting and beautiful artwork.
It is, actually. But what demographic did you have in mind in writing this book?
Oh, that's a good story, because most of my life is working, trying to develop illustrated books. And whenever I send out a query to someone and to see if they want to do something like that or want to collaborate, I always make a point in saying that I'm a big fan of illustrated books being for everybody, for all ages, mm-hmm. even though the target demographic, it's funny, I usually say I'm writing for me as a 9-year-old, going back to that nerdy library haunter that I was. But and all ages is true. I mean, if a book is attractive enough, it's a standalone art form, a picture book or an illustrated book. And I'm mm-hmm. hoping the audience is pretty wide, even though the language in the poetry in the book is somewhat simple. But, you know, simple can be profound. Emily Dickinson, you know, she doesn't write more than 8 lines tops, but each word is perfectly chosen and it resonates. So, you know, that's the mix of we witches.
Yes, of course. We're all mixed up in one way or the other. Yes. All right. So here's the thing. I mean, when I learned to read, I would go to the library and instead of checking out C-Spot Runs, the first book I ever took out was called The Littlest Witch. And I checked it out so many times, they should have given it to me, seriously. I mean, I just, every time it was up, I'd come back and do it again. Now, my grandmother didn't want me to read about witches because her mother-in-law was said to be a village witch. And she was afraid that if I'd pick up the notion of wanting to be a witch, you know, she wouldn't like that. But the interesting part of that is that book, that I was checking out forever, was an innocent child's storybook whose author was not pagan, but, you know, like my grandmother, you know, she talked about wicked witches and not, you know, not happy little witches. And so, you know, so my grandmother said, nope, there's no such thing as a witch. Yeah, like that didn't help. But have you had any naysayers about writing a book for children about witches?
I only had one. I've taken the reins, like many publishers ask authors to do, to help out with marketing. And my angle of that was I sent many, many queries to bookstores, you know, mm-hmm. giving them the cover and telling them what the book's about and asking if they would want to carry it. And ordinarily, I got really positive response because I picked the bookstores pretty carefully. A lot of them were witchy bookstores, and stores that had, like, you know, paranormal sections and stuff like that. But I only got one response. I can't remember who it was. I could look it up. And they said, "We're a big fan of Fancy Nancy, but I would never, never expose my child to witchcraft." And that, you know, obviously they were speaking from a Christian angle. And I took it in stride and wrote back kind of a friendly, "You know, I understand entirely, but I should tell you that Fancy Nancy was a witch."
There you go.
At least she dresses like one, I said.
Yeah, see,
I never heard back. That was the only negative comment I've ever gotten.
Well, that's good. You know, I mean, you're very lucky because
I know.
The word witch you mentioned. Yeah.
Yes, and another publisher tells me that she gets a lot of kickback from Christians,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, you would guess that you would. I'm surprised I haven't gotten more.
Yeah, well, let's hope you don't, now that we're bringing it up, you know. You
that's all right.
Put it out to the universe, and maybe it'll come back. I don't know. But
you know, I don't want to get started, but, you know.
Oh, you can start a little bit. That's fine.
Well, everyone's got their God, and they all should be respected. God, Goddess, and the problem I had with some of the current politics is that why isn't it enough to just have your own beliefs and not impose them on other people? And I'll just leave it there.
It's true. Okay, so one thing about this book, and I think I hope everybody's old enough to remember Dr. Seuss books, okay? I mean, maybe there are some that aren't, but they're still out there, and I'm hoping that all children got to read Dr. Seuss. So your ABCs in the book are in rhyme, and you and I talked a little bit about rhyme the other day, because, like, my spells always rhyme, and, you know, I told you I did 100+ new spells for the new grimoire that's coming out soon.
Wow. Yeah.
You know, but I've always loved the playful rhymes of Dr. Seuss. I mean, I would read other books when I was a kid, but I could read Dr. Seuss's books without even reading the book anymore. I could recite those books, and it was because of the rhymes, I'm pretty sure. And you wrote a book called How to Rhyme Like Dr. Seuss, and I want to hear more about that.
Well, it wasn't a book. It was a course I taught
several
years at the Y in Manhattan. And it was wonderful. I had a wonderful time. I enjoyed it probably more than the students did. They were all adults. But Seuss is great. You know, I too got addicted, inoculated by Dr. Seuss very, very young. And just as a quick sidebar, which led me very quickly to Stephen Sondheim, who was a brilliant, you know, rhymester, rhyming person. If you mm-hmm. wanted to take a crash course, I would hit Sondheim, Seuss, and there's tons of others. I'm not going to try to bring them up now. But anyway, yeah. Where do we go from the course? It was, you know, I just exposed people to everything. Like, do you remember The Music Man, the musical?
Mm-hmm.
There's an opening song to The Music Man called Rock Island, which is an old sort of bluesy song about trains. And in The Music Man, there's a car full of traveling salesmen. And it's brilliant. Meredith Wilson was the composer and the book writer. And the whole show starts with, it's not orchestrated, it's just vocalese. And when the train starts up, one of the salesmen starts with, "Cash for the cotton goods, cash for," and they imitate the clackety clack of the train coming up to full speed and then decelerating on the way down. And it's rap and it's rhyme and it's brilliant. And the man didn't need to do anything else in his entire career except for that one song, which would put him on the map. So the clanging of words is, I can't learn foreign languages, but I really like playing with words.
Well, you know, I mean, I used to not do a lot of rhyming things, and I could do it. I would say the word, and then I'd go, you know, the A, the B, the C, that, you know, to fill it out and see what I could get. But then after a while, when I had to get serious, I had to get a rhyming dictionary.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, that's always helpful, but sometimes you get really tripped up with rhymes. I mean, you know, you hear the old thing, well, you can't rhyme anything with orange. I don't know that that's true. I never really tried.
If you go on Google and type that in, people have tried and they have some solutions. Usually it's with two words or three words, but there's some answers to that.
Yeah, yeah. But I think the rhymes are usually playful, you know, and I think that's why people like them. You know, you listen to it, it gets lighthearted. Well, it's not all lighthearted. You can rhyme bad things too. I never thought that when I saw that you did the rhyming teaching, that was kind of amazing. I mean, why did you decide to do that?
Well, because I was enjoying it. I was writing a couple of books for the parent company of the imprint that publishes the Wee Witches books, mm-hmm. Schiffer Publishing. Mm-hmm. And it's a series called Unhinged History, which is all based on true stories. But I take a little snarky view, putting it into rhyme. And they're a little bit more, I'd say, much more sophisticated than We Witches, but still for that nerdy 9-year-old I mentioned earlier. And I was just all wrapped up in doing that kind of rhyme. And Stephen Fry, anybody? The actor?
Mm-hmm. He's great.
Yeah, he played Oscar Wilde. He's a poet, and he's good. He's really good.
Yeah.
And he, like me, got all immersed in the poetry stuff several years ago before he did everything else he did, and published a book called, and I want to make sure I get this right because it's a pun, The Ode Less Traveled. And it's basically a love song to rhyming. And he gives examples toward the end of the book. But the opening, the introduction, I'm wandering around. I said I was going to sit still. Sit down. Anyway, he said, he says, you know, writing poetry is the only thing people do. They think they can do it without the kind of instruction that every other skill, sport, or artwork requires. You can't just sit down at the piano and expect to be an expert, et cetera, et cetera. But for rhyming, people think because they can speak and they know the language that, you know, free verse is, I don't want to betray too many biases, but I have a thing about space bar poetry where, here's a good example. When I was teaching the class, I did a little kind of a sneaky thing as an introduction. I would hand out a paragraph. It was like 4 or 5 lines. It was a beautiful little story about an older couple coming on the dance floor with some vintage music and dancing around and rattling their bones and whatever. It was really, really lovely. And I had somebody read it out loud. And then I gave them the original structure format of that piece of writing, and it was so-called a poem. It was a few lines, space, next line, space, next line, and for the life of me, I can't figure out why they would want to call it a poem when it was a beautiful piece of prose. It kind of undervalues prose writing to think that it makes it special because you have a space bar on your computer. Mm-hmm. Am I betraying too many biases here? But anyway, that's the kind of approach I had. So you can tell how all over the map my love for this stuff is. And I tried to, you know, transfer that to the students. And some got it. And it's unbelievable, Marla, how some people just don't have a bone for rhyme. They just can't get it. They can't feel it, which is fine. I mean, you know, God bless, but. It's just amazing how just it won't get through for some people.
Well, and some people can't read rhyme. And I think I mentioned this to you the other day that somebody, I was on their show a long time ago, and she was talking about, all your spells are on rhyme, because it was one of the spell books that we're talking about. And she says, but, you know, they don't always rhyme. And, because it's not the words, it's also, what's the word about it? How the syllables and how you say it, right? Is there a word for that? Mm-hmm. I don't know how.
Meter, rhyme?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, there. And so, you know, I for a minute I got kind of like, what Everything rhymes. I mean, I kill myself to make them rhyme. And now you're telling everybody that they don't rhyme. But, you know, so it's people can't rhyme and people can't read rhymes sometimes. It's just, you know, there's a little trick to it, or it's ingrained or something like that, you know?
I do know. And I get kind of angry when I go into some bookstores and see books for my, you know, launched, you know, target audience, that 9-year-old I sort of start my writing for. And what passes for rhyme is not good. It's really, I mean, it's not even basic sooth. And he's, you know, he's very good at what he does, but it's very simple. It's very elemental. Mm-hmm. And I won't get specific, but there's a book out that earned a sequel because it did so well. And I got past the first couple of pages and I just couldn't continue. You know, it's like, if this was the editor accepted it as acceptable rhyming for children, no wonder people are not rhyming anymore.
Yeah, well, and witchcraft gets a nod with writing because of shows like Bewitched, all the spells, you know, and probably other shows, you know, doing that too. And then some people will say, well, can you cast a spell without rhyme? Well, of course you can. You can cast a spell without even saying anything.
Exactly, yes.
But yeah, but they say, you know, it's rhyming and it works and it's, you know, whatever, because of the medium. You know, they say, okay, this is how this happened and this is how this happened. And, you know, it's entertainment and it's fun.
That's what makes it special. You know, rhyming sort of elevates it, as other religions know very well, because, you know, things that are formal sounding, if not rhyming, take it beyond, you know, normal conversation and make it more significant or spiritual or something. It rings when you rhyme. You can mm-hmm. use those vowels and really conjure some energy with rhyme.
Yeah. And now that we're talking about rhymes, I'm thinking about song lyrics. Mm-hmm. And I'm not hearing in my head, most of them are rhymes. Not so
they
much
are.
Anymore, but maybe earlier on.
Well, it really depends on the genre of music and the writer, how much they care. And one of the other things I would bring up in the class is how, you know, don't look to pop music for accurate rhymes. If you want to go for hard end rhymes, it would be musical theater, but even there's some elbow room. Because pop music just, you know, they kind of get close depending on the writer. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. The meter also stretches because you can lengthen a note in between. It's not quite as a drum beat as it is when it's standard poetry, but anyway, it gets kind of loose in pop music. In theater, it's much tighter, and you know, for a book, it's really up to the author or the editor. But you know where I stand.
You stand, yes, you are. Yeah, so yeah, it was really kind of interesting just to think about that because you know, show tunes are always probably either patter songs or rhyming songs for the most part.
Yeah, sure. What's kicking around in my head, and I'll just say it because it's such a wonderful eccentric rhyme, is Sondheim's Company, which has been around for a million years. Mm-hmm. One of the songs is You Can Drive a Person Crazy, where the three women, and in this case men, because they switch genres in the latest production of Company, so the lead is a woman now rather than a man from the original. Anyway, the lyric is something like, basically they're complaining about how they can't read him. You know, she flirts, they get together, they go on dates, but they don't really know what's going on. And the lyric is, when a person's personality is personable, something, and the rhyme is, it's harder than a matador coercinable.
So you make up words?
That's an incredible rhyme.
Yeah, it is. Is that a real word, though? I mean, because I know people do that. They make up a rhyme to make it fit if they can't get anything off the top of their head.
Oh, you're thinking coercinable as one word, and it's coercing a bull. Like,
oh, okay. Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. But that's very creative of you, because either one works for me.
Yeah, exactly. Chat room comment. question. It says, rhymes are a great way to create powerful and personal incantations.
I agree.
Yeah?
Sure.
Yeah, and it's fun. But, you know, people say, well, you know, we should do this because, you know, spells are really something that we just have to be really sober about, and there can't be any fun. But you know what? It can. And it just, it makes
it, it also depends on the purpose of the spell.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and Kathy in the chat room said Cole Porter was a brilliant person with rhymes in his songs. Yes, he was.
He was.
Cole Porter, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, going back in time.
He was nuts. some of his list songs, which I have dog-eared to go back to, one mm-hmm. of it is Let's Not Talk About Love, I think
yeah.
it's his.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's incredible. I mean, they just go on and on and on with multisyllabic words. And Danny Kaye, anybody remember Danny
Kaye?
Oh,
sure. Yep.
Yeah. Danny Kaye had a double jointed mouth, and he could tackle Cole Porter stuff like nobody else. There, you can go to YouTube, and get Danny Kaye and Cole Porter, and you can listen to him just like, you know, motor mouth these songs. It's unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. The first half went away, so we're going to take a half year break. Yep. See, now
oh
you can,
God.
Okay, we're going to take a break and you can go pacing around for next 2 minutes. And in the meantime, we will sit here and wait for you. And we'll be back in 2 minutes.
Okay, be back.
Cauldron will be right back. So don't go away. If you end up with webbed feet, remember, you've been warned.
As you go about your daily life, look closer. Every year across America, a staggering 4.2 million youth are homeless or trafficked. Covenant House is the national leader providing safe housing for youth, 50 years strong. Every youth who walks into Covenant House gets clean clothes, hot meals, medical care, and a safe place to sleep. So look closer at Covenant House and help us fight youth homelessness. To help or get help, go to covenanthouse.org.
Are you haunted by shadow people in the middle of the night?
Do you secretly love all things creepy and spooky, enjoying ghost stories and horror fiction from the best storytellers?
Do you have a true ghost experience you want to share, but no one will believe you?
If yes, listen to the professionals on What Are You Afraid of? Power Paranormal Show, Friday nights at 9 p.m. on ParaX Radio and at www.whatareyouafraidofpodcast.com.
What are you afraid of on ParaX?
Our creepy and demented hosts are on call to provide you with all your spooky needs with true ghost stories, interviews, indie music, and new horror fiction.
We are ready to scare you.
Era X.
Missed an episode of Stirring the Cauldron? Then be sure to check out MarlaBrooks.com and check out the archive. And while you're there, check out Marla's weekly Witch's Oracle card reading. Explore the site to find many great resources, such as information on tarot, oracle readings, metaphysical consultations, and links to all of Marla's books. That's MarlaBrooks.com. Welcome back to Stirring the Cauldron. Once again, here's your host, Marla Brooks.
And we've been talking to Ted Enoch about his book, We Witches, and he's going to do some reading about his favorite ABCs from the book. And we've got a lot of other things to talk about, but I think it's ABC time. So let's hear some of your favorites.
I got it up on the screen here. I like different poems for different reasons in this book. I'll start with the letter E, and then we can talk about why it's one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is. It's best to go barefoot to honor the earth. Winter toes, summer toes, sleep and rebirth. There's a lot going on in there.
Yes, there is.
Yeah.
Well,
honor the earth is a signal. It tells you the territory we're in. The winter toes, summer toes is cute and fun, and it spins off of honor the earth. But the sleep and rebirth, like nature, you know, plants die and then come back in the spring, and, you know, we do. And so it gets, it kind of tiptoes up to the profound.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And before you say another one, it was probably difficult because you had 26 letters, words, or 26 things to figure out how you're going to mm-hmm. do it. And I was thinking, what did he, before I even read it, how did he do X? You know, because all of a sudden that comes up, you know. So how did you choose those particular things, each letter?
Well, Beth McConnell Roth and I wrote the book together. Mm-hmm. And she, and in the beginning, she and I, you know, on our own, put together some random possibilities for each letter. And then we just brought them to the table and discussed and decided which ones were our favorite or had most potential or were too arcane or difficult. And, you know, we just narrowed it down that way.
Mm, okay. Because, you know, it's...
But X is funny. X is hard. And, you know, we may talk about the sequel, but I could read you the X poem of in the sequel book, and it's a reach.
That's okay. So what are some of your other ones? Because I know you have a few.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. The next one, F, is just shows you a real contrast of what the book does. Red Pook, that's R-E-D-P-O-O-K. Red Pook is a fairy. She tickles my nose with tassels of willow and essence of rose. Other than the fairy stuff, and Pook is like Pooka, which is Irish for fairy. I just like the word, how the words kind of flow together in this, and the rhyming things, the internal rhymes of tassels and willow and essence and that kind of stuff. I just think it's a pretty good piece of poetry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Oh, and more? Let me find out.
Yeah, others? Yeah. Because you had a few, and they're really very clever. And
okay,
you know, it's
easy.
It's easier for kids to understand, and of course, it's easier for adults, mostly. Do a couple more.
Here's one I like, and I'll explain why for another different reason. This is the L poem.
Mm-hmm.
Her shawl is soft shadow. Do it again. Her shawl is soft shadows. Try one more time. Read what's on the screen. Okay. Her shawl is soft showers. His blanket crisp snow. The lady brings snowdrops. The Lord mistletoe.
Mm.
So here we get a little bit more, you know, in terms of the goddess and God and their respective correspondences in terms of flowers and nature. And this is one of them that gets, you know, hopefully this would prompt the conversation. You know, who's the lady? What's a snowdrop? Things like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I want to say, too, that, you know, when I first, I didn't have the book, but it came. But I thought, oh, this is going to be a nice book and whatever. And it's a beautiful book. It's hardback, which, I never got one from Chiffer. Not a hardback. But it's a book of what, like 26 pages, you know, with a couple of, you know, pages in the beginning and the end. It's a big page, you know, so they're it's not like your scribbly artist that some people do. I mean, if you look at each card, each page, there is so many things to look at in the picture. It's not just a picture. I mean, it's like a mural or something. It's amazing.
Well, the borders are kind of still lifes. They connect to the gist of the poem, but they're pretty elaborate and I told you I was slow, and I am slow. So it took a long time to get the book done. I love the borders, and I love their complication and some of the symbolism in there. But you're right. I mean, there is a lot on every page.
It's just like tarot cards. You know, people read the cards. Yeah, okay, so it's the magician, you know, and everybody knows what the magician is for. But when you look at the cards, they say you're not going to do a good reading on tarot unless you look at every little bit of the illustrations on the card, as opposed to an oracle deck. So that kind of reminds me of that, because you have to just sit and look and find things, you know, and if you look again, you'll see it that you didn't see it the first time, you'll see it again. So it's just really kind of amazingly well put together. And so it's not like you're going to turn the page. You're going to do the thing and turn the page. No, you're going to read the thing, but then you're going to stare at that picture for a while.
Well, thanks. You know, I think I told you I was working. Beth and I were working on a deck that I had to bail on because of my glacial illustration ability. But to give you one example, it was an oracle deck. It was called the Witch's Altar. Never happened. But each card was going to be taking a cue from those borders, and we witches, they were basically elaborate still lives. It was almost like a desktop or an altar top of a witch that had a collection of inanimate objects, like, you know, a tarot card and a teacup, and there was stuff behind it and random statues. The only example that comes to mind was the Fool card was a cat lying on a board game, you know, messing around with the pieces, with, you know, its tail wrapped in a ribbon. So each one was a scene that, like you were saying, if you spent time with the scene, you would be prompted to go in different directions in terms of the meaning of the card. Yeah, it was a card. But anyway, I've been taking notes on the back of some index cards that I used when we were prepping the deck. And I was going, oh, what a good idea. And since the deck is not going to happen, I've been looking at the doodles for each of the different cards, and they were really nice. I felt bad that I had to put an end to the project.
Well, you could pick it up sometime when you have nothing better to do. Although, if somebody goes over and looks at you on Amazon, puts your name in there, there are a lot of books, a ton of books in there. And I wanted to jump on this one because all of a sudden I saw the Harry Potter coloring book. And my radar went up. I really wanted it. but you were part of that, right?
I was. My agent got me the job. I was a fan. I was a latecomer to Harry Potter. A friend of mine was a librarian, and she said, you'd love these books. And I said, yeah, I'll get around to them. And maybe 10 years later, I got around to them. So, and I did love them, especially from the third book on. The first couple are for kids. And then when she starts going dark, it gets like, oh, there we go. But yeah, I became a big fan of the movies too. I think the movies are really good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I loved being able to work on the book. Should I talk about getting ill in the middle of it?
Yeah, because that made it pulled you away from it. Yeah, you can talk about that.
I did all. I'm a pretty good. It's funny, as an illustrator, I've never taken a live drawing course. You know, where you have a model and sketch from. You know, you look at the person and put it on the paper, and I've never done that. I worked from photographs. So I was able to do a pretty good job, you know, tracing paper over photographs, capturing the likenesses of our beloved characters from Harry Potter. And I got through the whole book. I was able to do all the pencil drawings for the whole book. And then, surprise, surprise, I found out I had oral cancer. Caught it early, but of course it upended everything, including finishing that book. So I had to bring on another available artist in my agency, and she did the ink line for it. So I may have done one or two for the entirety of the book, but she did the rest. So what you'll see in, you know, I'm sure it's out of print by now, but if you can find a used copy, it's a collaborative venture, that book. As fun as it was for as long as it could be.
Well, and if it's a coloring book and – you know, I've looked, and they can still get it from Scholastics. I went and looked.
Oh, good. Okay.
Because here's the thing. Here, it's about your the way you do things. It's the little minutiae in there. You know, that coloring book, because I looked, it had the same kind of things that you would probably take a very long time to fill in because it's so intricate. You know, it's come kind of like lace. I don't know if I'm making any sense. But that's the kind of coloring book I would want to get. You know, not the one that you could just take a crayon and fill it in and, you know, whatever. You have to be really careful about going through the lines on that. And
the lines are pretty elaborate. There's shots from the movie. So I didn't cut back on the detailing on what's on Dumbledore's desk and things like that. So, oh, by the way, Dumbledore. One of the things about Harry Potter I always wondered about is that Dumbledore sounds really stupid. What a dumb name for a character. It sounds like, you know, the word dumb is in there, and he's supposed to be a powerful wizard. And it never quite sat with me. And then just seriously, like a couple of weeks ago, I don't know what I was listening to, but somebody said that Dumbledore is a folk term for a bumblebee in England.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
See, we keep learning as we go, and it's stuff that you're probably never going to think about it again. But yeah, and I swear to God, I'm going to get those coloring books because I really want to do them because of the intricacy there. You know,
I mean, look forward to seeing your work.
And it's something that you can't really use crayons with because there's lots of little tiny pieces. You have to do
colored pencils.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Although I really want to buy a big Crayolas, the 64 pack or whatever that I never got to have when I was a kid. I only had small packs, not the big ones. And I didn't have the pencil sharpener in there either. I will figure it out and I will let you know. But yeah.
Post it on your social media. I'd love to see some.
And I'll just send it to you in email.
Okay. All right. And then I'll post it for you. when I was a kid, I did get the big box. And one of the things that I loved about it is the weird names of some of the colors.
Yes.
And you go in there and they were pretty creative about naming some of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they were kind of intelligently done. Now I think some of the names are just so very simple on the colors. Mm. You know, they changed it.
Like Ralph Lauren colors, you know, house paint stuff,
and
I think makeup, fingernail paint has really interesting name choices. I really enjoy looking at somebody's good idea to describe, you know, a deep red as blood of the something or whatever. But house paint has great names.
Mm-hmm. Now I just looked at the chat room. Yeah. And there's an interesting comment. At first I kind of went, huh? But then I've been thinking about this. But we were talking about the Oracle deck. I talked about the Oracle deck to start with. But she said, this book could be used as an Oracle deck for children to learn from, perhaps. Because each one of those letters, what do you think?
Absolutely. And we tried to change the mood from page to page, too. Mm-hmm. Some of it is, you know, kind of dark and more mystical, and others are bright, sunny days. But, yeah, mm-hmm. you could read it as an oracle, I assume. I mean, there are some practices where they do paging, I think even in the Bible, where you just randomly open a page and look at a passage randomly. And read it as some kind of, you know, comment or prediction on your day.
Bibliomancy,
exactly. So sure, I imagine you could with the book.
I wouldn't have thought about that. That's neat. And I missed something, too. Did you mention that there is a sequel to the Wee Witches book?
Oh, yeah. I my screen is full of little handy references here. Yeah, it's called, it's something we've had in, The Wee Witches is all girls of various stripes and colors. But one of the things that you will come across if you do any even cursory research about Wicca and witchcraft is that men have always been a big part of, you know, both sexes have always been part of covens. There was a period when feminism was on the rise that, understandably enough, there were a lot of women-only groups because that way you wouldn't have to kind of bat back men's impositions of, you know, being strong-minded about some decisions. So there were a lot of women only. But from the beginning of Wicca and probably early on in the old religion, men were always part of it. So it seemed like a natural to go to the sequel for the book, which is called Boys Are Witches Too. And it's exactly what it is. It's just the 26 letters. And in this case, they're all boys, a diverse collection of boys. And it's kind of the same thing as We Witches, except now we have the experience of the first book. So it's a little bit more focused here and there, but not in terms of the stuff I said early on in this talk. It still doesn't, hammer anything home. It's still a very gentle, very playful exposure to this and that. Yeah. I can read you a couple of lines from the introduction, which I actually just put up on Facebook as a for the cover tease of this.
Okay, yeah.
See. Here it is. Picture a person. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention early on, which you mentioned about the book you got out as a kid about little witches, was it called?
The Littlest
one,
Witch.
One of the problems. Yeah, there's a couple of sites on Instagram that are witchy, and one of them posts pictures of witches all the time, and my hand is like poised right over the comment button. Is that she never also the witches she regularly posts are the cliche witches, the bent nose, the wart on the nose, the ugly faces. There's so many beautiful and transcendent pictures of witches out there. I don't know why it's still the old hag with the cat. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
Well, you do know. I mean. I had my wart shaved off, and when I go out, I use a color that takes away the greenish on my face.
I understand.
Yeah, right. Go ahead. Sorry.
There's that Roald Dahl movie that just came out, the remake with witches with Anne Hathaway, where they look pretty until they go into the back room and start doing a ceremony, and then
I love
pull
that
off their
movie.
Mask.
I love
yes,
that
exactly.
movie. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Take up their heads.
But anyway, here's the intro to the boys' book. Picture a person practicing witchcraft. You probably right away thought of a woman, maybe old and ugly, hopefully not, tossing yucky things into a bubbling cauldron. But the female-only thing is only pretty recent. Early on, witch was actually a verb. It was something one did, not who one is. And that's kind of the launching point.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, stereotypes, it's okay on Halloween, but, I really don't know any witches that have warts or, club feet or, whatever. But that the movie The Witches, was I just adored it. It was so funny. I really liked it.
Like Dr. Seuss, Roald Dahl is now falling out of grace because they were creatures of their time and they were racist in a way.
Yeah.
Cancel culture is everywhere, and we have to be at least understanding, if not forgiving. People do great work, but they're still, if you're raised in the 30s and 40s and 50s, you're going to be not as open-minded and, advanced as people in the 2000s. But then, we've got our own problems.
Yeah, that's for sure. So, yeah. Are you working real quick? Because now we're going to pretty soon get to go away. You working on anything new right now?
I hope to do a third book in the series. I've mumbled it here and there to the powers that be, but I've been gathering information because it's a lot of fun. I like doing research. Some writers don't. On familiars. I think it would be a natural third to do animals.
Oh, that would be very good. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I would buy that one. Yeah.
Good. I hope they're listening. And and the other series that I mentioned earlier, the history series, there's one called the mystery series that's sort of a spinoff along the same lines. And I think I mentioned there's a book that is sort of in the Tumblr right now, not the social media Tumblr, but the maybe not Tumblr, about the Fox sisters.
That'll be interesting.
The four mothers of spiritualism. Done in rhyme. Beautifully. Oh, I should mention Shiloh. Shiloh Penfield is my partner in these books. She's an illustrator. She's amazing. And we're working closer and closer together. And going back to my being very slow as an illustrator, we came up with a brilliant idea that I would do the pencil line and then take it to a friendly FedEx, which I can copy to make it look like an ink line, which she would scan. And we, which is boys, is done that way. It's my pencils. She scans them. She turns it into an ink line, and she does the most amazing, trippy, transcendent color work that she makes me look fantastic. So thank you, Shiloh, if you're listening. And she did the art for the Fox Sisters book, and we have a sequel that we started working on, but we're waiting to get kind of a commitment to the series of books about UFOs. And can I remember the title? Because it's kind of complex. Pie Plates, Something, Saucers, and Cigars is the title.
I like that. All right.
That's enough. That's plenty for, you know, what we're
working
on.
No, you got caught up in that. What?
Well, I am working on something. Why is it escaping me? Oh, God, because it doesn't have to do with witchiness at all. I'm working on a book for a major museum, which I'm also writing. And talk about, this is interesting. You know, me being, you know, sort of very strict about rhyme and all that stuff I mentioned early on, because of this book for the museum, because there's so much science and multisyllabic Latin words and things I really had to be accurate about. And I got comments and feedback from department heads. So, you know, this is much more, you know, nailed down information than I'm used to working with. I had to get more relaxed about end rhymes. You know, going back to pop music, I kind of like had to give myself a break and not go with something that's close enough. I can't think of an example, but you know what I mean. They're kind of like three quarters rhyming.
that'll work too. Before we get the hook, where can people find you?
Where can they find me? I have a very neglected website. I can be you can see a lot of me if you just Google me on the internet. A lot of stuff will pop up, ancient history and current things. The website, if you want to go there, you'll see some of the stuff we discussed tonight, including I think a card or two from that dead deck. but the more recent things, if you go to Red Feather and type in my name in the search, the books I've done there will come up. And for Schiffer, their parent company, if you type my name in, the two or three books will come up. And the indie publisher I also work for is called Pixel Mouse House Books, Pixel as in you know, and Mouse House Books. And if you go there, and again, if you type in my name, you'll see those two history books I mentioned, and coming soon, there's some Fox Sisters teasers there. So basically, those two sites, if you search me on them, you'll see most of the current work.
Perfect. All right. Well, thank you for joining tonight. I mean, we're having fun. I hope everybody else was having fun.
Yeah. I hope so, Marla. I love talking with you. This is really lovely.
Well, we do it again. And we got to thank everybody for listening in. And until next time, everybody, blessed be and merry meet again. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Stirring the Cauldron with Marla Brooks. Please join us again next week at the same time for another great guest and more cauldron stirring. Any rebroadcast or other use of this program without explicit permission is strictly prohibited. Copyright 2024. The Mysterioso March by Kevin MacLeod is licensed through Incompetech.com.